Affairs come to order. It is about a minute after 9 o'clock. We have members present, Senator Willikowski, Vice Chair Coghill. If you have any vice, he'll be right on it. Myself, Stoltz. Senator Huggins is still away on state business, and Senator McGuire's office called. She'll be absent today as well. So this is, we're at 60%, but still pretty strong. We have a quorum. We have a series of our ministerial duties, reviewing governor's appointees. We have all of them are on phone other than the commissioner who is here in person. He's a little bit intimidated. I see he brought his muscle, Mr. Henderson, that this was going to be a very friendly review, hopefully.
And DPS.
And DPS as well. Gotcha. So, Commissioner, join us and introduce yourself and talk about your hopes and aspirations for this critical department, its constitutional mission, and let us and other Alaskans know why Governor Walker, you believe, made a good choice in elevating you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Ron Taylor, and I'm the Commissioner Designee for the Department of Corrections.
We'll call you Commissioner Designee. Okay.
Thank you. And, Mr. Chair, this is an incredible and unique opportunity to serve the people of the state of Alaska at this particular time, especially going through budget reductions and looking at ways that we can improve the overall effectiveness and efficiency of our Department of Corrections. For the past several years, we've been working very hard with legislators and the criminal justice community overall to actually reduce recidivism and look for ways to make improvements into our system. Obviously, the budget is going to be somewhat of a challenge in helping us to maintain that direction, but I believe that it's a great direction for the department to be working in terms of recidivism reduction, because the more that we make people successful in the community and keep them in the community, the easier our jobs become, where we're not locking up so many people that really should be productive citizens for the state of Alaska. And I really believe that to the core of my being in terms of ensuring that the department is doing everything possible to help people be successful when they enter into our system, because we've seen failure for a lot of years, and now that we're starting to see some success and a change in that overall direction, I think that that's important to continue going in that direction.
Why don't you give us some of your philosophy? I don't ever look at just one component of our administration of justice. Tell us what your vision is, how the other agencies that are administering justice, all the way from tagging and bagging all the way to reformation.
Well, actually, it is the reentry management. That's the whole vision of what we should be about. We should be working toward ensuring that once they come inside the doors, we're doing everything to keep them out. We were in that enforcement mentality, and we had that for a long period of time, and we saw where that got us, which is high recidivism rates and quite a bit of failure, to be honest with you. Lack of programming was another big obstacle that we had inside the institutions. We now have one of the most comprehensive programming sets in the nation, according to our performance review that was done as a legislative audit review. And for us, that is a critical component in moving us toward the reentry system that we've moved toward.
Any questions for the commissioner?
Sure. First of all, thank you for taking a position, and I appreciate it. And I've worked with you, and the recidivism has been one of the areas where I have focused. The prison population is kind of an interesting population, and I appreciate the programs, and I'll work with you everywhere I can to make sure that reentry is one of the top priorities. One of the other issues that we have, and maybe you could speak to it, is we are not only keeping those who are bad actors and trying to hold them accountable, but we also have those who have been charged in the pretrial situation. That's a huge population movement problem, And that has been a sticking point for good programs and, you know, kind of that steady hand. How are we doing on that? You probably know more than I do, and it's a lingering question in my mind, how we do that. And I think it has an interesting probation parole issue, too, because the population movement is kind of yanked pretty hard by the reentry problem. So can you describe how you see that and where we might go better with it?
To the Chair, to Senator Coghill, 40% of our population now is unsentenced, which is a pretty substantial unsentenced population in our system. And you're right, that causes major problems with movement as well as getting them invested or involved in programming when we don't know at what point they will be discharged or sentenced. We're also, I think, part of the things that we're working on is with our other criminal justice partners to see if those persons on a pre-sentence status actually need to be in custody, or can we be placing them in some other community placement, such as electronic monitoring or at a halfway house right now. Those are some of the things that we're exploring. We want to make sure that all the beds that we have left in terms of hard bed or institutional beds are actually reserved for those persons who really need to be in a prison setting. Those that don't need to be in a prison setting, we need to do everything we can to transition them out into the community. So programming, I think what you're going to see as part of the department moving forward is looking at our halfway houses and establishing some programming there in the halfway houses so that those persons who may be unsentenced or may be minimal risk to the public, they're actually getting the programming needs met through the halfway houses that we're not doing at this particular point, but in the near future we will be.
Mr. Chairman, maybe a couple of questions. One of them is, do we have the opportunity to do risk assessments on the pretrial population?
Through the chair to Senator Coghill, no, we have not been doing that. That's something that we certainly will be looking at as part of our shift to programming in the halfway houses.
Does that, Mr. Chairman, does that come from recommendations by the court?
Through the chair to Senator Coghill, it will be either that or be part of our staff that would do those recommendations.
All right. And then just for me, the halfway houses seem to, in Fairbanks especially, have been much more porous. And I know they're contracts, but if I get complaints about the correction system, it's usually from the halfway house issue. How do you see that, and is there ways we can do that better?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, absolutely there are ways that we can improve in terms of halfway houses, and especially at in Fairbanks. That one, we need to make sure we're putting the right people into the halfway houses, and then two, we need to improve on the way that we provide quality assurance to the halfway houses, and so we're going to be looking at that. Also working with DPS in terms of looking at their service dogs that they are going to retire or transfer. We'll pick up a couple of those dogs so that we can help utilize their services throughout our system.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I would just add, I guess, Senator Coghill, I guess by nature, the halfway houses are porous because people are walking in and out of there to work during the daytime, and it's a transitional release. And I just want to give the public an expectation that they're supposed to be a replication of a prison cell.
Yeah, part of the porousness, though, is the drugs that go in and out.
Sure. That's Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Commissioner. Appreciate all the work you've done over the years. I've always enjoyed found that you have always added a lot to our debates in Judiciary Committee.
Thanks,
so I look forward to you being successful in this position. But could you talk a little bit about the rationale for, and I guess there may be some changes afoot, but talk a little bit about the rationale for closing down some of the community jails and maybe what some of the other alternatives you looked at?
You can point at OMB if you want to.
Through the chair to Senator Wilikowski, we were not advocating closing down the community.
Sorry, you're right. Thank you for correcting me on that.
So in terms of terminating the contract with the community jails, yes. And did we look at everything? Yes, we did. We looked at the impact of that type of a reduction throughout our system. We'd have to close a couple of facilities. And to take two institutions offline would take us more than just from now to July 1st to be able to do that. It would take some time to go through all the different processes that we would have to do in terms of an RFP to start to transfer people out, looking at their medical needs, their programmatic needs, also working with our institutional POs to reclassify those that are going out, as well as ensuring that once they are in their new are moving toward their new facility, that they would be acceptable in that community. And then working on property and mail issues, those are all the other things that we would have to do. That's going to take time, and transportation, obviously. That's a big piece of what we would have to do for that. And so what you see as part of the institutional population is a ramping down of the minimum in Palmer to at least close the minimum camp at Palmer and then use those minimums into the halfway house vacancies that we have right now, and to be able to reshift our entire population to ensure that the minimums are getting community placement as much as possible. There's some that obviously we're not going to be able to put in the community placement, but as many of those that we can put in the community and not become the barriers ourselves, we need to do that. Programming. We could have looked at programming, and we just built a huge component in terms of programming, and to start rolling that back would have a detrimental impact on the recidivism rates that we're looking at. And the same with probation and parole. You know, one of the things that the performance review pointed out for us was that the staffing across the board at the Department of Correction is minimal. So it's not just inside the institutions. It's all of our administrative capacity, probation and parole, medical, all of that. And so we had to take that into consideration, that when we're making those reductions, we're literally going to cut units, not just take 5% here and 5% there from each of the components, but we're really talking about, at that point, cutting out entire units.
Well, Commissioner, I think the question, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you. It's been one of the largest issues with corrections. It has been morale and the whole chain of command and leadership. What are you going to do differently? And Joe Schmidt and his family are friends of mine, but this is business, and this is how we're dealing with the line officers, and the fact that we there have been manifestations of mistrust and expressions very public. How do you fix that? And what steps have you already taken?
I think the biggest part that we need to do is make sure that we're communicating and making sure that people understand what the administration is about. And we've reached out to our employees to give them an access to the commissioner's office and access to ways that we can make improvements in the department. And we'll continue to be willing to work with any of our employee groups to improve morale where we can.
But you do recognize there's been a problem. Where's that rate on your...
That is like one of the top things that I came in focused on, making sure that we start addressing those issues right away.
I wish you luck, and as I think we have the volatility of the situation with officer safety is an incredible concern of mine, and just being treated. We do have court mandates how we treat the incarcerated folks. We don't need a mandate. I think that can come from the top of how we treat and respect the men and women on the front lines behind that razor ribbon and concrete. So, you and I have talked in the past, and I appreciate some of the steps you're already taking, and the real tale will be told on the reaction we get from our officers as often the issues, I know there are pay issues, things to deal with, but the number one issue that I've personally dealt with in corrections has been the morale, the just the general respect and treatment, and knowing that folks that are in charge of their how they're deployed in very dangerous situations treat and respect them. So we'll continue to work with this. It didn't happen overnight that things devolved. It's not going to happen overnight that everything's prepared, but I sure sense good faith, and I appreciate that, Commissioner.
Thank you, sir.
Any other questions for Mr. Taylor? Well, next time, we'll see you working on your administration justice issues, but I guess our next official action will be in a joint session later, and I tell you right now, I would have no problem confirming you, but nobody here will be required to make a commitment. We're just forwarding these to the floor. Certainly, if you're challenged, I'll be happy to speak up for you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that, Mr. Chair.
We'll just while we're going on to the next witness, we'll pass out the form so we can keep our cadence. And thank you very much, Commissioner.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, gentlemen.
We'll take a brief at ease. Back to order after a brief recess. Next person we have that's online right now is Dennis Cook, one of the Supreme Court's Justice Faves appointees to the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics. Are you here, Mr. Cook? Online.
I'm here.
Why don't you go and introduce yourself for the record and tell us what motivates you to be involved in regulating ethical behavior, and why you want to do it some more.
I'm Skip Cook. I was born and raised in Fairbanks. I'm a currently retired attorney after 33 years of law practice. My first introduction to state government was actually back shortly after I was out of college. I was appointed to run the election in Fairbanks in December 1963 for the mandatory bill, which wasn't very popular in Fairbanks, but anyway, I ran that election, and then later was hired to come down to work in the local affairs agency, which was at that point just organizing boroughs and municipalities and rewriting the municipal code. That was in the early 60s, and then I went back to Fairbanks and was the manager of the Centennial Exposition up there in 1967. And then when the flood struck and the exposition was over, I went out to law school and then came back to Fairbanks and practiced until 2013. I've been on the Ethics Committee since 1998. I've enjoyed the work. It's challenging. We have several functions. One of the ones we, which is one of our more favorite, is training to try to avoid people tripping over the Ethics Act, so to speak. So that is the more enjoyable part. We do deal with advisory opinions to help people understand the Act and avoid violation. And then we deal with complaints, which is more adjudicatory function of the committee. It's been a challenge. I've enjoyed working with people on the committee and with the legislators over the years. And we're in a position now that we're in transition in the committee because second administrator Joyce Anderson has retired, and now we're moving on to Jerry Anderson, who's not related but has assumed the position. So I've been on for a number of years. Was encouraged to stay on because of the need for some continuity during a transition, and it's a way I've enjoyed serving, and am willing to continue in that position.
Any questions for Mr. Cook?
Just a note of appreciation, because I've been on the Ethics Committee and served with Mr. Cook, and appreciate your willingness to stay on through the transition time. I think that continuity is going to be very great. And so just a note of appreciation, Mr. Chairman.
I don't have the familiarity. I've been very fortunate never have served on the Ethics Committee or appeared before the Ethics Committee. We want to keep those statuses constant. So with that, I didn't have any questions. I've heard nothing but positive professional information about you from my friends from the Interior, irrespective of party. So if you've been there since 98, if there had been a problem, it takes a supermajority to retain a member of the Ethics Committee on each side. So I don't have any issues. I appreciate you taking some time out of your private day today, and also the service down here and throughout the year on this volunteer committee. So if there are no other questions for Mr. Cook, we'll go ahead and move on, and thank you for your name will be forwarded onto the joint session at a time to be determined later on. Well, actually, excuse me, I'm going to correct that. It's going to be confirmed by each individual house at some time.
Right.
Unlike the other one. I'm sorry. That's my unfamiliarity with ethics, having not appeared before you.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, sir. That was, I caught a mistake there, and you would have corrected me, I know, Senator. Thank you, Mr. Cook. Was Mr. Walker available? We'll try to pick him up later. A similar...
Hello.
Oh, you are here. Welcome, Mr. Walker. Are you there, sir?
Yes, I am.
Okay. You probably heard Mr. Cook. I think a similar brief biography why you want to continue serving.
Sure. I came up to Alaska in 1992 right out of law school. My father thought I was actually crazy because I turned down the job in Philadelphia to come up to Alaska with no job. But I was going to give it a year, and I've been up here ever since. I'm a practicing attorney. I have a firm with my wife. Done all kinds of aspects of litigation as far as being a lawyer. I was a public defender for a while and worked in private practice for a corporate firm doing litigation. And now I work with my wife as my law partner. Owned several small businesses prior to while I was practicing law, and was asked to become a member of the committee in 2002, I believe. Have been on the committee since then, and was actually considering taking my name off the committee this year when my time was up. And after speaking to my colleagues and a lot of people on the committee, I decided to stay on the committee because of the transition that we are going through. We have a new executive director, and one of the reasons that I wish to stay on is because I have institutional memory as far as what has taken place, which I think would be helpful. Not as institutional as Skip's, of course, but have been on for a while. I think it's very challenging work. I think the statutes that we have to deal with are very nuanced, and I think that experience with dealing with the issues, I think, will go a long way to get our executive director up to speed and to help in, during this transition. I really don't have anything else to add, gentlemen and ladies.
Thank you, Mr. Walker. I wish somebody, we never get the Supreme Court justice never appears for us where there's any kind of give and take, but this is one thing. I'd sure like to know who really forwards those appointments, because I remember during the first iteration of the Ethics Committee in the early 90s, we had a legislative staffer who was basically forwarded the names. The Supreme Court justice really didn't have a lot of interest, and it was a partisan legislative staffer, and you had a series of rejections by one house or the other. But I really can't believe that Justice Fave is there
going through that without some consult. I wish which activist law clerk or whatever, you know, if the Supreme Court justice is the right person to be making these, I think it was a compromise. When you were appointed, did you have a interview with the Supreme Court justice, and what type of process was that, Mr. Walker?
I got a phone call from the Supreme Court Justice, and I've known her. I've worked with her. I appeared before her when she was on the bench before she went up to the Supreme Court. I had known her for a while, worked with committees with her. So she knew of me. But as far as the process goes, she called me. We discussed it. She explained to me what it was. I had to give it some thought and thought this would be a good way to serve.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Walker. And I guess we have to have appreciation for somebody willing to sign up for another hitch for this. It's not when you join to become a beloved figure, I don't think.
No, when I'm in the elevators, it's usually pretty quiet if there's other people in
there. And again, I'm glad that I've never met you other than hearing your classes.
Mr. Chairman, once again, I served on the Ethics Committee and worked with Mr. Walker, and the thoughtfulness and the preparation that is required and reviewing the statutes, which he said can be difficult sometimes to interpret and somewhat arcane, and they're just done through a process that sometimes doesn't bring the clarity that we'd all like to see in law, but I appreciate, Harmon, the willingness to stick through it for the institutional memory. I think that's going to be very important, and hopefully as we get this new executive director, you'll be able to see the day that you'll be off it. But anyway, thank you for doing that. I appreciate it.
Any other questions for Mr. Walker? Well, thank you, Mr. Walker. If you would like to, you're welcome to leave the we're going to forward. Your name will be forwarded on for each respective legislative body to vote on the confirmations.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for your time, sir. Next is Mr. McCord, designee for the Alaska Public Offices Commission online. Mr. McCord. And if he appears later, we'll come back to him.
I'm here.
Oh, you are here. Welcome, sir. I believe we're muted, so it takes you a little while to step up.
I was uncertain about your protocol, so I didn't want to interrupt.
Oh, very good. Welcome, sir. And why don't you introduce yourself and tell us about yourself, your time in Alaska, and you are a political party designee for the seat, the Libertarian Party, and tell us about your representation of your party on APOC, what your expectations are, and anything else you wish to share about yourself.
Thank you very much. Yes, I'm a short-termer in Alaska. I've only been here since May. So my learning curve is quite steep, but in terms of being a Libertarian Party member, I have been such since the beginning, 1972, and I'm moved here from Washington State, and I'm a semi-retired teacher. It's my fourth profession. I'm assuming people have some of the paperwork in front of them, but I'll just go over some things briefly.
And sir, it's not just for us, it's for the public as well, so that's why I asked.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for reminding me. I appreciate that. I received most of my education is college, university, up to a master's degree level, But I've had additional training since then, like marine biology in Friday Harbor, Washington, and actually served in the Bering Sea as a foreign fishing vessel observer. So I was, in a sense, been connected to Alaska for quite some time, but I've been living in the Pacific Northwest for the last 48 years. Deep roots in the Pacific Northwest, in other words.
Yeah.
Most of my relevant experience is dealing most from the grassroots point of view. I've been a community organizer and a co-founder of different organizations and an officer. And at the grassroots level, moving on up into working for as an elected board member of REI, which is Recreational Equipment Incorporated. And my latest venture was with the founding and leadership of the Snow Isle Natural Foods Co-op. I've also served on two state commissions in Washington State. One was called the Special Levy Study Commission, and the other was to screen and select the first director of the Department of Ecology. I think in the interest of brevity, I think I'll open it to questions from the committee.
Thank you, Mr. McCord. I would first ask you, how do you what do you view your role as on the Alaska Public Offices Commission? Do you represent your party? I guess I want you.
Well, first and foremost, I represent the interests of objective and fair evaluation of all the issues that come before the commission. I don't view myself as a party advocate as much as I view objectivity and fairness under the rules and regulations.
Thank you. I think that's the answer everybody hoped for in a good public servant. So, Senator Cockhill, did you?
I don't have any questions. I think that the laws as we've given them to you are looking for that openness, and so I think what we're looking for in commission members, though, is that fair objectivity. So with that, I don't have any questions. I think you answered my first question.
Any other questions for Mr. McCord? Yes, APOC's all on our minds today. If it's not completed, it has to be completed by midnight tonight, which is our reporting system, and that trans in not just for public officials that are elected, but a wide variety of appointed officials too. But, I don't have any other questions. I think your resume may have had quite a lot of detail in it, but we wanted to give you a chance to put your own voice on your career and what your hopes were as a appointed official nominated by your party and appointed by Governor Walker. That's that system, how that system works. It's part of the public education process. So, there are no other questions for Mr. McCord. We'll thank you for your time, and I'll give you a chance if you want any other parting comments or statements, sir.
Well, I'd just like to wish everybody on the committee best wishes on your filings.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time, and I appreciate serving the state of Alaska and the citizens.
Thank you, Mr. McCord. I think our last two today are from the Board of Game. And we have two folks One might be offline. One, Mr. Fanning, might, I believe, is who you're off net as well. We'll start with Mr. Fanning. Does everybody have his folder? His Mr. Fanning, when you get unmuted, go ahead and start with your introduction to yourself and your present in whatever detail you choose about your nomination to the Board of Game.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Hello, and thank you guys for taking the time this morning to go over this. And this phone keeps cutting in and out, so I'll do the best I can. I'm from Yakutat, originally from Fairbanks, and we moved down to Yakutat when I was a teenager, and I've grown up here in the hunting and fishing business in Yakutat, and it would be an honor to serve on the Board of Game. And
why don't you go ahead and introduce your name for the record, Kip?
Yes, Kip Fanning.
Okay, go on with your narrative, sir.
Okay. As I said, born in Fairbanks and raised in Yakutat, more or less, and our family's had a hunting and fishing lodge here my whole life, and I've been raised in the outdoor realm of things of the state. So anyways, I just feel like it's an honor to get the opportunity to even get to this stage of the game, and if anybody has any questions, I'd like to try to answer them.
I don't think Mr. Fanning would remember when I first met him because he was a fairly young kid. His father served as a Libertarian member of the House and a Republican member of the State Senate, so very distinguished career at both junctures, and but has also been involved in the renewable resource industries. But tell us what you do for a living, Mr. Fanning, and how that might relate to your appointment.
Well, my family, we have the Yakutat Lodge, and we do hunting and fishing. The hunting part has been sold off at this time, but we still do the fishing part. And, you know, just being born and raised in the big game guiding industry, I feel like it's this is a good opportunity for me to take what I've grown up in and learned and watch the resources come and go and try to protect some resources and get a good balance.
So you've had involvement in the game industry, but you don't currently now. Your family has divested from that.
Correct. Yes, I am not a registered guide. My dad did sell the business to Ron Warren, who's like my brother, but I am not affiliated with the business.
Okay, appreciate putting that on the record. Any questions for Mr. Fanning?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Fanning, for being willing to step into this position. You're familiar with the guiding issue, so one of the big questions that's going to come our way at a high speed is the use of that resource with regard to guiding. And so help me with your perspective on some of the guide concession questions that have risen up down through the years. Do we need to go into a better guiding concession type regulation, or is our game management the better tool? And just give me your philosophy on that. You don't need to give me details, but I know that's going to come the way in the board, so that's a conversation I'd like to hear you have with us.
Ooh, that's a big question. But, you know, there's I can't speak on that on an educated form. I know that it used to be everybody, the guides had areas, and then that went away. And they still
can have concession areas. But as far as that goes, I would be asking people, you know, that know more than I do, and try to come up with an answer that fits both the guides and the public. You know, there needs to be a balance there, and I don't know what the answer is without getting more information as to what's being proposed for concessions or different regulations.
And Mr. Chairman, and thank you for your honesty on that, because if you get confirmed, and which it looks like you probably will, you're going to be knee deep in that discussion. The other thing is, those of us in Alaska who look at the moose population and fish population primarily for our food sources, many people are concerned that the pressure on predator control, especially in up in my neck of the woods, the bears are eating the calves when the females are calving. We have wolf and bear that are predators. They seem to be getting a bigger population of the ungulate than the humans are. Is that something that you ever wandered into on studying? And do you understand the different game management units issues, or is that something you're going to have to learn?
You know, I'm going to have to learn a bunch of it. Obviously, you know, even in Alaska, you hear a million things, and everybody has an opinion, but that's something that I'm not against predator control if done proper, and goes back to the balance. But I also, you know, I want to ask those that have the scientific evidence as to what their recommendations and what they see going on, and as well as the elders of the area. You know, a lot of those people know more than anybody.
Thank you, Senator Coghill, and you should have no embarrassment not having an answer to the guide concessioning, because that's mired the legislative process. DNR hasn't been able to come up with a comprehensive plan that's constitutional, and so don't feel any failing that you don't have an answer on that, and having an open mind, I think, is an incredible asset, Mr. Fanning. Senator Coghill.
And I'm asking questions that I ask myself, so I'm kind of asking you, because you're going to be way deep into the conversation, just like we are in so many ways here. Up in my neck of the woods, there's a big debate on the hunting of the female moose, antlerless they call it, but there's the female moose plus the antlerless, which can be male moose at certain times of the year. And I think philosophically, in my hometown, Nenana, they're not a big fan of taking out the females that will be the bearing element. Have you put any thought into that? I can tell you, you're going to have to put some thought into it, but there's a philosophy and a game management issue that can be science-based, and I know we're having a big clash about that up in Unit 20A and B right now. Have you had that presented to you at all?
No, I haven't. I'm not trying to avoid questions or anything. I do like to study them and ask questions and try to come up with the best answers versus just coming off the cusp and saying something that's not, you know, not even a close to an educated answer.
Well, I appreciate that, and I'm asking questions that we get asked quite often down here, and there are things that are coming your way, and as long as you're willing to keep an open mind and listen and try to figure out how to navigate through for the best benefit of Alaskans, I'm game to support you.
He's game.
I thought I'd use the game here somewhere.
Any other questions for in the past? I didn't see on the previous testifiers folks that were testifying, but we do have quite a few for the Board of Game, I see. And then we'll come back to Mr. Braybrick. He wanted to make some comments on Mr. Taylor. So we'll come at the end. I was a little remiss in specifically asking for public testimony. We didn't have any signed in, so if there was anybody that wanted to speak on any of these, we'll do it retroactively. And,
okay.
But I do see there's several for the Board of Game, and so we'll go through both nominees and then have public comment on both of them. So we'll set aside Mr. Fanning. You're welcome to. I don't know anybody that's listened to Ms. Alba talk and hasn't learned something, so it's probably a good place for you to stay online and listen. So, Ms. Alba, are you online?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear. Welcome, and go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us about a little bit about yourself, your background, you're currently serving on, and why you want to continue to serve.
Very good. Good morning, and thank you, Chairman Stoltz and members of the committee. My name is Teresa Sager Alba. I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I was born and raised in Fairbanks. I still consider that home away from home. I have lived in a dry 24-by-24 log cabin on the Tok Cutoff near Mentasta Pass since about 1984. I was raised in a hunting and fishing family, and this remains a very important part of my life. My husband, Bill, and I spend a significant share of our time hunting, fishing, and trapping, and we fill our freezer each year with wild game and fish. We also have two small greenhouses, and we raise a garden, so we add to the protein supply with plenty of vegetables each year. In terms of my employment, from 1983 to 1995, I worked for the state legislature. And since that time, I have worked for a private firm, Summit Consulting Services. That's an engineering and construction management firm, and it's based south of Tok. We do have offices in Anchorage and Fairbanks, but the home office is south of Tok, actually very close to where I live on the Tok Cutoff. The business is owned by my neighbor, and it's located on his home property. On a personal level, I have devoted a lot of volunteer time and effort to organizations to help protect and enhance hunting, fishing, and trapping, as well as Second Amendment rights and the public's right to enjoy outdoor experiences and to connect with their natural environment. I consider that very important, and so I've devoted some of my free time and volunteer time to those efforts. And I think that my service on the game board, which I've served two terms now, that has been a real privilege, and I feel it's been a logical transition for me. And I hope that my layman's outdoor Alaskan's background might be of some positive contribution to Alaska's wildlife and also to the people who value that wildlife in their own lives. I'm very grateful for the opportunity to serve in this position for the past 6 years, and I certainly appreciate the committee's consideration of my reappointment.
Any questions for Ms. Sager Alba? Senator Conkiel.
First of all, thank you for serving 6 years, and you've probably seen some of those very tough questions come before the game board. So I think the unit that I get the most input on is the unit up by the Fairbanks area, 20A and B, and I think on the question of the antlerless moose hunt has been probably the most contentious. Is there a solution coming from the board? Is that something that the administration has to deal with? And I'm asking a little bit out of ignorance because I've only heard, you know, my constituent comments. I haven't really sat through a game board meeting. Am I asking the right question? Because I asked it of the last nominee, and it sounds to me like there could be a science base to it, but there's also a philosophical base to it. Can you help me understand that better? And maybe you have a philosophy that would be something you could put on.
Yes, through the chair, Senator Coghill, that is an ongoing, contentious, and difficult issue. I would say, based on the time that I've served on the board, and I'm very sympathetic to Mr. Fanning because when I first started, I barely kept my head above water, that's for sure. The game board issues are complex. But, you know, the antlerless moose hunts are provided and are adopted by the board because, in essence, they prevent the moose population from from overgrazing the range and basically causing a population crash. And what we are all most interested in is building a sustainable moose population that will allow people to hunt and to harvest and to put meat on the table. I do understand the concern with antlerless hunts, and I know that there is a segment of folks in the interior who have an opposition to that, and I certainly respect that opinion. I have voted in favor of the antlerless hunts when they have, basically when the science is right. And I will say that in the last time that we took up this issue in cycle, which I believe was last year in Fairbanks during our interior meeting, the moose population in Unit 20A had actually been brought down to a little bit below the population objective. And I don't think that was the intent of anyone. It was to keep it reduced so that it didn't go, go too high. But when that reduction resulted in going slightly below the population objective, and of course that was based on a population estimate, so it wasn't precise, but that raises a red flag for me for sure, and I voted against the reauthorization in Unit 20A. The only reason that it was brought forward for reauthorization in the last meeting was to allow or to enable the targeted hunts, which are basically permit-driven hunts that occur in the highly populated areas, and that's in order to remove moose from areas where they become a city problem, so to speak, and perhaps a public safety issue. And I certainly thought that that little piece of regulation was okay, but because we were below the population objective in 20A, it didn't support reauthorization of the antlerless hunt. And I guess the other thing to add to that is, you know, the advisory committees have veto authority, in essence, over the antlerless hunts. And so if a majority of the advisory committees from the area do not reauthorize the hunt from their committee level, then the board is not authorized to reauthorize the hunt. We're not allowed to reauthorize it. So, you know, that advisory committee power is... you know, is there. It's nothing that the board can override, and I certainly make an effort to honor that. And anyway, that's kind of a long way around, but that's, I think, where I'm at on antlerless hunts, if that's helpful to answering your question.
Yeah, and thank you. And I know it takes a steady hand to work through all those things, and the AC, the advisor committees, definitely have their own political storm that they have to deal with. So, first of all, I just want to let you know I'm grateful. I know that the sustained yield and the human consumption are some things that we're concerned about. The other thing is the bear population seems to be growing, and up in the interior anyway, the bear population, at least what I've heard, and so maybe from your perspective you can give me some knowledge on, is it the bear predation that is as much as some people purport it to be, or is it something that you've been able to get your hands around on a kind of a science base?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, bear predation is significant in a number of areas in the state. Right now, without going back through the data that the department presents, I'm afraid I can't speak specifically to population numbers and so forth in specific units or subunits. But I will say that when it becomes necessary to reduce predators, if we're in a situation where the population objective is not being met for moose or caribou, then the board has a statutory responsibility to act in those situations and to look at intensive management options to reduce predator numbers, certainly not wipe them out, but to reduce predator numbers and to bring ungulate populations up for the sake of human harvest. Aside from philosophical positions, there's statutory responsibilities that the board is supposed to follow in order to achieve those goals. And I certainly do try to stay within the law and pursue those regulatory options when ungulate numbers are down and when predator numbers are up to the point where population objectives for the ungulates are not being met.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any other questions. I just wanted to ask, and sometimes I'm asking questions based on what I've heard, and so I think you have a depth of knowledge that I appreciate, and so I'm willing, and quite frankly, I'm excited about you can continue on in the board. So your knowledge, I would sit down and ask you the 20 questions that out of ignorance, but I'm not going to take the time in committee to do that, but I sure look forward to further conversations with you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. There are some folks online to testify on this specific seats. We have Mike Tinker from Fairbanks and then Al Barrett. Mr. Tinker.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. This is Mike Tinker in Fairbanks, and I hope you can hear me okay.
Loud and clear, sir.
Thank you very much. I can say good morning to Senator Coghill, who is a senator from my district. I don't want him to feel left out this morning. Gentlemen, we appreciate the time and the opportunity to testify. I can testify on both of these candidates. We did some vetting work with Governor Walker on both of them. Teresa has been such a, you know, in the trenches worker for the Board of Game during her service and on the issues before her service, that it's we feel a little bit like Senator Coghill with regard to her support, and that is we just don't think there's many candidates available out there that that could perform in the capacity she has in as well. This morning I'm speaking on behalf of the Alaska Wildlife Conservation Association. That's an association of hunters, fishers, trappers based basically here in Fairbanks, but with as many Alaskan outdoor organizations, fingers all over the state. we think also that Kip Fanning will do an excellent job. Mr. Fanning has the basic background to ask the type of questions that will bring him quickly up to speed on these various issues, and he will not be afraid to do so. Those of us, like you, Senator Stoltz, that knew his father, recognize that there are not many bashful members of the Fanning family. But the basic background of what's right, balancing our populations with our allocation, and realizing, as Senator Coghill has kind of suggested here this morning, that the allocation issues are not just straightforward and easy to do, that they have a lot of components. So I would just, on behalf of the organization, like to endorse both of these candidates and hope that you will continue your support for them on to the Senate. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Tinker. Next, Al Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, I'll be representing the Alaska Outdoor Council this morning, and we both both candidates, Mrs. Sager Albaugh and Kip Fanning, we generously support them. Excuse me. Mrs. Sager Albaugh is a great Board of Game member. We observed, and she seemed very well prepared prior to the meeting starting, and during the meeting, getting that extra institutional knowledge, you know, from members of the public and organizations that are participating at the Board of Game. She's really well known for attending ACs outside her area. She at least once or twice a year is in the Fairbanks area, the Mat-Su area, the Anchorage area, listening in, answering their questions, giving her updates, and then especially if there's anything contentious like 20A Moose, as the Senator Coghill's aware of. She's been here for several of those meetings just to observe and listen to the public and not just to what the ACs are doing. Mrs. Sager Albaugh has just an excellent knowledge of subsistence allocation. As you hear, she's raised and lived, you know, with a subsistence background, and she protects our subsistence allocations and our subsistence opportunities, and that's really a wealth of, you know, in these times and days, we rely on that. She's committed to the conservation and wildlife resources and the protection of the range. You know, as much as we like access, and we all support access, and the AOC is very much behind access, she understands that, and she allows and understands as much access that we can get to allow us those opportunities to, you know, to collect wildlife resources. And so I think that's all I have right now. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Barrett. Mirror what a lot of us already know about Ms. Sager-Alba. Are there any other members of the public or here in Juneau or online that wish to testify on the Board of Game nominees, either one or both of them? Then I will, as we further these on to joint session, I will put something on the record. I am a member of the Alaska Outdoor Council and have served along Ms. Sager-Alba on that. I know there have been campaigns I've been accused of being involved with special interests like the Second Amendment and hunting and other things. And the common refrain is from some of my colleagues, how the hell do I get accused of that too? I'm not embarrassed that I defend the values of my district and of the people of Alaska. And I will say about Ms. What I universally hear about Ms. Sager-Alba, that she is the most prepared, studious, on-task member of the Board of Game, keeps the information, and having done her homework, often keeps the board meetings on track and on task, which is no small task when you're with the membership. And I think Mr. Fanning would do well just to hang close to her and just watch how she does things. And I think that's the best OJT that you can get, Mr. Fanning. Any other comments on the... So we move those forward. With thanks to members of the public who testified and the folks that are up for confirmation that appeared before us today. Was there anybody on any other nominees that wished to speak, either online or in present? First we'll go to online. And I was remiss in not specifically asking for those. I didn't see sign-ins, but we will in the future routinely ask. Mr. Vrabrick, you had on any one of them. I think you wanted to talk about APOC.
Well, for record, Mr. Chairman, first I'm Terry Vrabrick, Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Public Safety. But since we're talking about APOC, I have filed my 2015 documents already. And on behalf of Commissioner Folger and Department of Public Safety, we just wanted to say that we support the nomination of Commissioner Taylor. We've had a great working relationship with him and his staff. In his acting role here currently as Commissioner Designee, we've had some great meetings already, including the topic which came up earlier this hour on community jails, and we look forward to working with the Commissioner and his staff. And we've already covered some of the topics that you brought up today. So just on behalf of Commissioner, I'd like to support that nomination.
Thank you for, and I'm sorry I didn't recognize you earlier, but you might have embarrassed Commissioner Taylor, Mike. Public gushing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are there any questions about any of the nominees that appeared before us? So we will forward those on. I believe we have a standard form that I think it's already implied, and certainly everybody has inferred that you have your own vote and you're not committing a requirement to vote for or against. The public can indicate how we're leaning by many of our comments as we're, and they certainly are willing to. They have all open access to communicate with us of their positions on these and any other confirmations that will be for us. So with that, we will adjourn state affairs at looks like about 10 minutes of 10 o'clock. Stay around to sign the reports. So we are adjourned.